homes.
And even as I was preparing this message a couple of weeks ago, a man in central London mowed down people on a pedestrian bridge and tried to get into the Houses of Parliament. And often we've seen these, and they've not just been these overseas happenings in the Middle East, when they happen in places like Nice and London and even Sydney, they're just so close to home. We live in tough times. A group called Open Doors that monitors persecution of Christians said this: 2016 was the worst year yet for Christian persecution ever since Open Doors began monitoring persecution 25 years ago. Persecution of Christians rose globally for the third year in a row, reaching unprecedented levels in countries located in South and Southeast Asia, among other locations. And Open Doors said places like North Korea, Somalia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and the Sudan are some of the worst areas. It's not just happening over there, but it is happening at unprecedented levels over there. Last year, 2016, was the worst, as that quote said, and that surpassed the previous worst year, which was 2015, which surpassed the previous worst year, which was 2014. Last year, 90,000 Christians lost their lives because of their faith. 2,400 churches were burnt down simply because they were churches. It's often people of one religion attacking the West or attacking Christians. Even today, we read of headlines in the newspapers like certain Christian companies, Christian not-for-profit organisations have to remove the names and addresses of their board members because they're being attacked so ferociously by people who don't like their stand on marriage and other issues. The persecution is not just over there, it's here. We're in tough times. And not just tough times because of those sort of things, but many of us go through personal tough times. It might be a particular season in life where you're doing it particularly difficult. And as I said, sometimes instructions like this are a bit like instructions about how to change a tyre. I don't need it, it's not relevant, I'm not dealing with it at the moment, so it's fine. I encourage you, even if you're not in the tough time or don't see that toughness in society, lean in, listen, and learn. I'm not having a go at people even who are going through tough times. It's just that I've seen over and over again, actually too often, that for many people, when they face a difficulty, their faith like turns to dust. They go to fear and uncertainty. Their faith seems so volatile and fragile that the least bit of challenge in their lives seems to put them off. There was a time, once upon a time, when faith was characterized by its toughness. There was a time when Christians were known for how dedicated and committed and tough they were in the midst of what they were going through, all sorts of amazing persecution. There was a time when faith was characterized by fearlessness and humility and confidence in Jesus. It was tough not because they were hard people, they were the most compassionate people there were. There was a time when that was the sort of faith that was exercised. And I say we need to get that back. It was Jesus who modeled it. Jesus gave the example of how to live like that. And the followers in the first century lived that out. I want to look at a passage from the Bible today that challenges us for us to have a faith like that again. Resilient, tough, in the midst of all sorts of circumstances that will come our way. We don't know who wrote this passage. Usually I like to go into a bit of background of who wrote it, and it's quite interesting sometimes when you know the background of the person who wrote it and what they're actually saying. But in the book of Hebrews, we don't know who wrote it. It was so enthusiastically copied and passed around to the the churches in the early days there that we didn't keep a record. It's like they must have had that first page stuck in that photocopier, you know, and how they put it there and it gets left behind. I don't know, it's not something like that. But it was a challenge to people who were living in that century to look at the faith that they had, that they'd grasped onto. They believed with certainty that Jesus had come back to life. But the way they were living and the things that were happening to them, they were starting to ask some questions about their faith. They started to ask, is it worth it? Is it worth what I'm going through? Is it worth the sacrifice that I have to make? Is it worth the things that are happening to me, the things that are happening to my children, the things that are happening to my home, the things that are happening to our church building? Is it worth it? And they asked also, is it working? Is this really going to work? Is this really going to pan out, or is Rome, the dominance of the Roman Empire, going to just overcome everything? As I said, them and many of the other Christians were totally convinced that Jesus was alive, and whoever wrote this to them to try to tell them, and telling us today, it is worth it. And it is working. So Hebrews 11, we'll be jumping around a little bit, but mainly looking at Hebrews 11 and 12 this morning. So follow it above me or in your notes if you have those there. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Now, that's one of the classical Bible definitions of faith. It's a great one. And it's not only a description about biblical faith, it's a description about faith in general. Faith is when we have a confidence in what we hope for, an assurance in what we don't see. For example, when you start a job, or maybe if you continue working at a job, and you meet and the boss says, this is how much you will get paid, and you nominate a bank account, this is where it will go, and you get told this is how much you'll get, and this is when it'll be weekly, or it'll be fortnightly, or it'll be monthly, and you start that job and you begin working, and for that week or that month or that fortnight, whatever it is, you work in faith, believing that by the end you will get what you worked for, even though you don't see it, even though you're hoping for it, but can't guarantee it, you have a confidence in what that's about. And that's what faith is. Faith is carrying on with life, living life as normal, like something you believed is true, even though you haven't seen it yet. Then the writer goes on to say, this is what the ancients were commended for. The ancients, he calls them. Not just old people, but people who lived in ancient times. The people that he will give a list of in the coming verses of Hebrews 11. The people that didn't see God come through but believed it anyway. Commended because God made them a promise. And they lived as though that promise was going to come true, even though they didn't see it. And he goes on to talk about Cain and Abel and Noah and all those great stories that we read about in the Old Testament. And then skip ahead to verse 13. It says this. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. See what it says there at the beginning? They were living by faith when they died. They lived their whole life and they never got to see the paycheck. They lived their whole life and they didn't see it come true. They welcomed from a distance. And that overall big picture life and death stuff that they were engaged in, they believed it right to the end, even when they died, even though they didn't see it come through in their lifetime. And that big promise was that Abraham, through him, through Abraham, that God would do something, that he would make him a great nation, and through that nation there would be one person that the whole earth would look to find blessing. And now we know that person is Jesus. But all those people that were promised that, they never got to see it in their lifetime. Abraham didn't. Isaac didn't. Jacob didn't. Joseph didn't. All those people that knew the promise, that were part of the promise, believed it, but didn't see it come true in their lifetime. Generation after generation didn't. There was always faithful people in that line to come through believing it, that God was going to come through. And this is a struggle I have when we compare some people today. They lived a whole life, not just weeks or months or years, a whole life believing, but didn't actually see it. And some people today go, well, God, I prayed for this on Monday and it's now Sunday and you haven't come through yet. How can I believe in a God like that? Well, maybe you've been busy with the flood, so we'll give you another week. But that's how some people see life and see faith and see their belief in God. And it's about piddly little things that we pray about, piddly little things that we ask about, rather than these big picture things. And it's almost embarrassing when we read what these other people went through. Verse 36, if we skip down to there. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. And we complain about our situation. But they remained faithful. And the writer, I can imagine, and many people believe that the way that these writings were done by scribes, that you can see it with Paul, that it just sort of flowed out of him. And there's other hints in his writings when he wrote that he was just talking and someone was writing it down. And I can see in my mind's eye, as this person is writing or dictating, he's thinking of the things that all these ancients went through. And then he looks up and makes this comment, and there's even a dash in my Bible, a dash there, and it just says, the world was not worthy of them. The world was not worthy of these people. The world didn't deserve people like this to live in it. These people didn't deserve what happened to them. The world was giving it to them. The world doesn't deserve people like that, to get treated like that. There was once a version of faith that was like that. There was once a version of faith where the people who lived with toughness, lived with resilience despite what was being thrown at them, much worse than we face today. Open Doors might have been making those calculations of how much persecution, but it was much worse in that first century. It's much worse at other times in history. There was once a version of faith that caused people to have the best reaction. And out of that, it caused people to be so impressed, so in awe of these people who lived like that. There was once a version of faith that was tough as nails. And it started with Jews, and then Samaritans, this half-breed people between Jews and Gentiles came in. And then there were the full-blown Gentiles who knew nothing of the background of the Old Testament. And there was men and women and children and poor. And then the rich came. And by the end of the New Testament, we read there was even people that were belonging to the household of Caesar that accepted Jesus as their Saviour. We read of this account, if we skip over to the book of Acts. Acts tells us about the development of the church and what happened there. And it says in Acts 5 verse 12, the apostles performed many signs and wonders among the people. All the believers used to meet together in Solomon's colonnade. It was like this big outer court. It was like the forecourt at Suncorp Stadium there. It was just so big. There were so many of them. That's where the people gathered. And it says in verse 13, no one else dared join them. Why didn't they want to do that? Did they not want to join them? Did they think twice about joining? It doesn't say that. It says they didn't even dare to join them. As if they were saying, these people are so incredible. Look at the stuff that they're putting up with. Look at the might of the Roman Empire and what the Rome is throwing at them. And these people respond with love and compassion. They bury our dead. They look after our sick when we run away and we don't want anything to do with them. And they're saying, do you think we could join them? We're not worthy to join them. Do you think it'd be okay? Because it goes on in that verse 13. No one else dared join them, even though they were highly regarded by the people. Nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number. People were lining up and they were saying, do you think it'd be okay if we came? Do we have that reputation with people? When we invite our people along to Easter, will they think that? Back to Hebrews, verse 39 of chapter 11. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. The only reason God didn't do it in their lifetime is that He had something better for us. The only reason God didn't do it for them is that He was including us in something, so that together, us and them, the people that lived back then and we who live today, that God had been planning something that was so amazing, so international that they wouldn't have even thought of, so historical that would reach back into the past and redeem all those who died like that, so historical, but so futuristic that would reach forward to the people that they couldn't imagine where they would live. So that 2,000 years later, people in a country called Australia that they wouldn't have even imagined can be talking about this stuff. So that together with us and them, they would be made perfect. God would bring it together. And this is the thing that challenges me when I read stuff like this. This is the thing that challenges me as I compare what they went through and their sort of attitude and what we go through in our tough times. And that is that they believed, they looked forward, believed, and were so faithful. We look back, seeing, but often are so fearful. In other words, you know, when you look into the future, you can't, you know, when you look forward, you can't tell what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. You've got to believe because you don't see it. We can look back. We know that's happened. We know what happened to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all through that line. In one sense, you have to believe it because you don't actually see it, but we know what's happened. These people looked forward and didn't have a clue what the next thing was. But they were so faithful in that. We look back knowing the story, and we're so fearful. Is God going to come through? Of course He will. He always has. Why are we so fearful in the midst of that? We're not just believing. In one sense, we are. We're not just believing. We can see it. It's happened. Why are we so fearful? Then he starts off chapter 12 because they didn't have the chapters when they wrote. He didn't say, oh, I'll stop there and I'll start a new thing. They just flowed in and someone's added the chapters that helps us to know where they are. So it just flowed in. Therefore, because of all this stuff that I've just done, because of all these people, because of that attitude they had of faith and they were so faithful, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and I just imagine even as he was writing, as he was aware of the stadiums in those days, the Colosseum hadn't been built yet, but he could imagine all these stadiums where they'd been to the athletic contests and seen the people in the grandstands, and he's thinking of all these people that he's just talked about, Noah and Abel, and all these people from way back filling the grandstands. And that years later, that the time where we live now, there's been another addition, there's another wing of grandstands, the people that have gone before, the people that we love and that we've known, cheering us on. And if you're quiet sometimes, you can hear them cheer us on. Since this has happened, and times are tough, what do we do? What should we do? What do? We hide, we fight, we whinge, we complain, we say stuff like, it will all be ruined. We blame the future generations, we blame the previous generation, we blame the government, we blame the church, we blame the pastor, we blame our parents. We hide, we say, it's too hard, it's not fair. I want to go back to the good old days. The writer doesn't say we should do that. But when we do it, you imagine how it sounds to these people. Imagine how it sounds to the people who were put to death by the sword and beheaded and sawn in two. My goodness, we'd be embarrassed to meet them. I would be embarrassed to meet them in heaven. What did you worry about? What did you get upset about? What did you pray about? Really? Really? Is that what you're concerned about? Is that what you're focused on? Is that what you're fixed on? Really? I'd be embarrassed to meet them. The stuff that I get upset about, the stuff I get concerned about, I'd be embarrassed. And instead of blaming, instead of being critical, instead of hiding away, I was talking to someone before, the sales of these underground bunkers has increased 350% this year. Instead of hiding, instead of getting away from things, what should we do? He says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses in the grandstand in the sky, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. What is holding you back? What is tripping you up? What is your focus on instead of where it should be? Throw it off. Get rid of it. Get away from it. And he says, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. I was reading about the different games that they had in the ancient games. They had a race. It was a 400-meter race. It was 200 meters up and back. They had a pole at the end of the 200 meters. They had to turn around the pole and come back. And they had lanes marked out by lime or gypsum. They had their own lanes marked for them. And so do we. We have our lanes. We have the race marked out for us. You can't be what someone else is. You can't run their race, but you can run yours. And what is the race marked for you, for us, for this generation at this time in Australia? Let's run it with perseverance. Are you up to it? Or are you going to get to it and say, no, I'm a scratching for the day. No, I can't keep going. No, I'll join the blame wagon or the hide wagon or the disappointment wagon. And this is the thing, he keeps going. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. And that's usually where our problem lies. Because our eyes are fixed on our problems, our eyes are fixed on our circumstances, our eyes are fixed on us, our eyes are fixed on our comfort, our eyes are fixed on our own safety and security. Instead of Jesus, who he says is the pioneer. Some old translations have the author. He wrote the stuff. Jesus wrote it. He pioneered it. And he perfected it. He set it going and he finished it off. So let's fix our eyes on him and nowhere else. And make him the point of reference. And think and research and ask, what would Jesus do? What did Jesus do? What would he say? How would he respond in situations like this? How were people close to Jesus going to do that? and he becomes our point of reference. And then he says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. Crucifixion was not invented by the Romans, but they perfected it as a way to kill people slowly while torturing them. If there was any sniff or hint of rebellion, they would crucify people. I read one in about 70 BC of a guy called Spartacus. You might have seen the Spartacus TV series. Well, the real Spartacus led a group of rebels to try to overcome Rome, and Rome, in a show of force, crucified all of them, all 6,000 of them. And between Appia and Rome, a distance of 180, 190 kilometres, about from here to Ballina, they crucified 6,000 people and put them on crosses all the way. It would be like every 30 metres there was a cross. They would do this as a show of force, the Romans. Jesus, as a kid, would have grown up knowing them, seeing them, smelling them. Crucifixions were reserved for the worst people, for rebels, for pirates, for slaves, for enemies of the state. It was considered the most shameful way to die. And Jesus endured the cross. But it says he scorned its shame. It was the most shameful way, because you were naked. I was talking to someone about this. You were probably naked, and just out of privacy and good taste, we don't see that, but you were crucified naked. But it says Jesus scorned the shame. Shame? So what? Shame? I laugh at shame. I don't care if I have to put up with this. Why? Because of the joy set before him. Because he knew he would be the answer to Abraham's blessing. He would be the person that everyone would look to be honoured. For the joy set before him, knowing that those of us who would call on his name, he would be able to sit down with at the right hand of the throne of God. And he could put up with the ridicule and put up with the scorn and make fun of it because of the joy of knowing that many more people would be in heaven because of what he did. It's heavy, isn't it? And just when you thought it was safe to keep reading, he says one more thing. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So if you're thinking, if you're reading this in this century or the first one, and you're tempted to conclude it's not working, it's not worth it, let's just go home, let's do what we used to do and go back to that lifestyle, let's just give up because it's too hard. Just in case you're tempted to conclude that, the writer finishes by saying, consider him so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I want to address three groups of people as we close. Older people. I won't get you to stand up because it's too hard. I know I worked hard all day and I can hardly stand up at the moment. Can I say, if you're older and you've been in the faith a long time, don't grow weary and lose heart. I know for some of you physically that's hard. And it's harder the more you live and you make noises when you sit down and when you stand up and all those sort of things. Don't grow weary and lose heart. Show people, show younger people what it's like to have a life of faith lived out for longer than they've been alive, and show them in a good way, to show that your Saviour is faithful all the time. Don't grow weary. Don't lose heart. for younger ones. Let me say, don't grow weary and lose heart. I know you see some things in the older generation sometimes that are difficult, but I've just talked to them, so they'll be okay. Don't grow weary and lose heart when you see the faith not lived out by some people. Don't grow weary and lose heart when you think, oh, you know, there's so much to do in the world. Don't grow weary and lose heart. And third group, if you're still checking out faith, if you're not sure whether this is true or not and you will fully embrace it and formally embrace it, let me say to you, don't grow weary and lose heart. Yes, you won't always see the best example in Christians, but look to Jesus. Look to Him and He will never let you down. Don't grow weary and lose heart. There was once a version of faith that was so strong, that was so resilient, that put up with so much compared to what we go through, that was tough as nails, that was evidenced by Jesus. And people wanted to join them. People were asking permission if it was okay to join them. And if we have that sort of faith today, we can have that sort of influence on our world that they did on theirs. You up for it? I want to ask you, just as we wrap up, we're going to play that song again a little bit quieter, the Death Was Arrested one. I wanted to get out those post-it notes that are there, that are in your pencil case there. Maybe it's people who are far away, who you can't invite here because they're a long way away, but will you pray, put their name on and pray for them. And symbolically, we will fill this chair with names of people that we'll be praying for, that we'll be inviting, along to our services over Easter. Palm Sunday next Sunday, Good Friday the following Friday, Easter Sunday the following Sunday. Will you write some names down? And just as we play that song, we'll wrap it up when it's done, but just come and pin the name on the empty seat so that you're praying for them. There's people that you know you're praying for, you invite to the services, or pray that they'll get to an Easter service wherever they are in Australia or around the world, that they'll hear of this message of faith that is tough as nails. Will you come?